Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
You guys ready? All right. You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
He's not awesome. There we go.
Today's cool fact of the day is that selenium is a mineral that's pretty commonly found in some parts of the world, but not other parts of the world, can help to reverse the effects of mercury poisoning. In fact, having selenium in your seafood, which naturally occurs, can help to reduce the risk, but not eliminate the risk of mercury in your food. And because selenium is so important to mitochondrial function, the island where I live, which is selenium deficient, they've actually brought moose to the island over and over. There's not enough selenium to make moose happy, so they swim back to the mainland. So apparently it matters, at least if you're a moose.
Interesting.
If you're listening at work or in your car, and this sounds a little different than normal, that's because this is recorded live in Denver with a few hundred of the coolest people in the audience. And if you enjoyed today's show, which you're about to enjoy, I would absolutely appreciate it if you went to iTunes and you left a review. It's one of the easiest things you can do. We're at more than 400 episodes, which is, geez, I don't know how many hours of time it takes to do all the work to get them ready. But anyway, that's a whole lot of investment of time. It takes you 30 seconds to leave a 5-star review, and I'd be super stoked if you do that. In fact, if you're in the live studio audience and you do it from your phone, I won't object. Today's guest is Isabella Wentz. She is, first and foremost, as she says, a health nerd. She's also a doctor of pharmacy, clinical pharmacist, and someone who, like me, had Hashimoto's thyroiditis. And this is your second time, third time on Bulletproof Radio?
Fourth time.
There's a reason that Isabella keeps coming back on Bulletproof Radio. It's because she knows her stuff. And I know a lot about thyroids. I fixed my Hashimoto's. And when I read Isabella's books, I'm like, oh, something kind of, I didn't know, even more, the stuff about tobacco and autoimmunity, just all sorts of crazy stuff. She's dug it all up. And my new book, Headstrong, is a really, really good book. But her new book is one step above it on the New York Times list. So you are talking to, or at least you're hearing an interview with someone who is now in her second week on the New York Times list and still kicked my ass on my first week. That's pretty legit, I gotta say. So congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. The name of your new book.
Hashimoto's Protocol.
Oh, you have to tell us the full subtitle. Did you memorize it?
So it's a 90-day plan for taking your health back and eliminating thyroid symptoms.
You said it backwards.
Oh, no.
Okay, I can tell you guys, I don't know the subtitle in my book at all. 12-week, 2-week something. It was headstrong was the important part, for God's sake. So I was impressed that you remembered that. I was just testing whether you had brain fog.
Not today. I took a whole bunch of your supplements backstage.
I noticed you were kind of bouncing around a little bit. That explains it. All right. So what we're going to talk about today, because you've been on the show before, is we're going to go a little bit deeper on what happened when you got Hashimoto's and also what it does to your energy. So tell me about when you first figured out that you had this and what it did to your brain specifically.
So I had been struggling with chronic fatigue for almost a decade by the time I found out I had Hashimoto's. I started with having symptoms in my first year of undergrad, and I went from this like bright-eyed and bushy-tailed kid. I was called an energizer bunny by, you know, everybody that knew me, or a busy bee, bumblebee. I was just always so bubbly and energetic. When all of a sudden, during my first year in college, I'm finding myself missing class, and I was like super type A, straight A student, just like really obsessive about like having the best grades, and I was missing class because I couldn't get up in the morning. In fact, one day I was, I was getting ready for my final exam. It's the night before, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna study. I'm gonna just really, really study hard for this exam. It's really important. And so I went to take a nap at around 2 p.m., and I actually woke up the following morning at 9 a.m. And my final exam had started at 7:30 that morning. And I'm like jumping out of my dorm room bed. I'm like running over, and unfortunately, I didn't do so well in class that semester, and this was quite devastating because, you know, I really wanted to become a pharmacist and help people, and they kind of don't let in people into pharmacy school when they don't have great grades. And so that just sort of continued. It was like I was sleeping for 14 to 16 hours without feeling refreshed. Eventually, I learned to work around that, and I worked my way down to sleeping about 12 hours each night. And I missed out on most of my 20s because of this. So when everybody else was out with friends and partying, I was like sleeping. Everybody else was achieving things, and I was like, okay, I either have to sleep or study, and that was how I got through pharmacy school. Things just kept going downhill from that point on, and I just kept having more and more symptoms where I started having carpal tunnel, I had acid reflux, irritable bowel syndrome. Eventually, I started having panic attacks, and then I had brain fog so bad that I was I was at work, and I would have to write everything down because I was afraid that I was going to miss something important, and I would have to obsessively like review my notes every single day because I just thought there was no way that I would be able to remember anything. My husband Michael, who's here, he would make jokes about my memory, and I was like very kindly and say, oh honey, I'm gonna write this down for you because we know how your memory is. And I'm like, that's not me. I used to be sharp. I used to be smart.
So I have to kind of wonder, the jokes were funny every time because you didn't remember them?
Yeah, I think he said that joke like once or twice, that's it. Yeah.
I actually believe that, Isabella. So, in your book, your new book, you have a 90-day plan for reversing autoimmune thyroid conditions. Quick question for the audience. How many of you have a thyroid issue that you know about? All right. For people who are listening, I'd say roughly 40% of the room. And how many of you know someone has a thyroid condition if it's not you? Pretty much the entire room. This is a massive problem in society, and it's mostly undiagnosed. In fact, what percentage of people have subclinical thyroid problems and don't know it?
So actually 27% of the population in the United States has Hashimoto's, and most of them do not know it. So when we look at the statistics of how many of those actually know, we're looking at 3 to 5% of people that are actually diagnosed out of the 27%. So it's crazy because millions of people are walking around each day thinking that it's their fault that they're overweight, that they're tired, that they're, you know, depressed, and it really is their thyroid.
So 10 years of struggling, or a little more than 10, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Or 90 days.
I don't know, yeah. For me, it was like 9 years until I found out I was diagnosed, and then a few more years until I got my health back, And since I started working with clients and dialing in my protocols, we've been able to see results actually in as little as 2 weeks, seeing 65% improvement, and then within 90 days, 80% improvement.
The reason that I invited Isabella here on stage with you is that all of you know someone, and roughly almost half of you have issues with this. This is one of those things that saps your energy, it saps your willpower, and it just makes you tired all the time. And what I figured out with Headstrong and even the Bulletproof Diet before that, it is like, what is the nature of willpower? And all the energy that you make comes from electricity in your body. And the thyroid hormone controls how much electricity your cells make. So no wonder like you're feeling crappy, and no wonder you yell at people you don't like, and you sleep all the time, and all that sort of stuff. And it's not like it's an on-off sort of thing, right? Like there are people who have just a little bit of this. What happens if you're just a little bit Hashimoto's?
So for people that have like the very beginning stages of Hashimoto's, a lot of times the early symptoms are going to be anxiety and just a feeling that something is off about your body. All of a sudden you feel sort of like a stranger in your own body. It's very hard to describe. You start wanting to withdraw from people around you, and really, in a way, a lot of my clients, a lot of my readers and people I've interviewed will say that they just feel like there's a wall around them that's preventing them from showing up in the world how they wish they could.
When I had Hashimoto's, it was kind of life-changing. They actually just diagnosed thyroid problems, not Hashimoto's at first. And this was maybe almost 20 years ago, 18 years ago. And the first time I had thyroid hormone, I'm like, holy crap, like they gave me cocaine. And for the record, I've actually truly never tried cocaine, but this is what I imagined cocaine would be. It doesn't seem like a smart biohacking drug to me, so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
What do you think? You're a pharmacologist. Like, should I?
Yeah, I don't think that's a good one.
Put
Sorry.
Her on the spot.
too many side
License
effects.
License at risk. See, that, yeah. That's the right answer. Yeah. So you can't take my biohacking license, so I can say whatever I want, which is kind of fun.
I like it.
But it was literally a game changer. And like I went on a business trip once and I forgot my thyroid. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Because it's literally like I'm myself, or at least partly myself again. So I called and had a friend like go to my place and like FedEx it to me wherever I was. Just because like it's critical to survival. And you get used to feeling like this, because unless you get this sudden, you know, something just whacked me over the head, if it's a slow decline as your immune system gets more and more into the mode of attacking your thyroid gland, you don't just sort of wake up one day with Hashimoto's. At least I never did. Did you? Like, do you know, because you work with enough people, do some people just wake up with Hashimoto's one day and like, God, my life sucks? Or is it like there was a slow decline?
So it's a progressive condition, right? Yeah. There are 5 stages to Hashimoto's. The very first stage, you just have the genetic predisposition, and I have a whole theory about it that we could talk about, but yeah. I actually believe it's the body's way of protecting itself and conserving resources and energy from an adaptive physiology standpoint. And so based on studies done in Chernobyl, up to 80% of us can actually have this genetic predisposition to develop the condition. And looking at the stats in the U.S., I'm not surprised. For all intents and purposes, in the first stage, you don't have symptoms, you don't have the condition, you just have the right genes for it. The second stage is when we start getting into symptoms. This is when we start getting into having an attack on the thyroid gland. So essentially, the immune system recognizes the thyroid gland as a foreign invader and starts attacking it bit by bit. Usually, people will say they have anxiety at that point. They might have obsessive compulsive tendencies. They're going to feel a little bit more tired, maybe gain some more weight. Their mood might be off. A lot of times, they're going to be at risk for getting misdiagnosed with depression because their TSH test, which is the screening test for thyroid disease, will still be normal. As that goes on, they get into stage 3, which is subclinical hypothyroidism. At this stage, we're going to have more attack on the thyroid, more thyroid tissue that's been damaged, as well as some changes in the TSH, and then we're also going to have more symptoms. If people are lucky, they get diagnosed at this point, and sometimes they're given thyroid hormone like you were. Stage 4 is when we have overt damage to the thyroid gland, and so much of it is destroyed that you cannot make enough thyroid hormone. And at this stage, you're feeling exhausted, you're feeling overweight, your mood is likely to be off. This is when most people get diagnosed, they get placed on thyroid hormones, and they're told that's it. It takes about 10 years to get from stage 2 to stage 10, or to stage 4, and most people are misdiagnosed with fertility issues, with mental health issues, with pork-to-mouth disease, or all other crazy kind of things that doctors say. Stage 5 is when we progress into other types of autoimmune conditions. So the point is that you don't just wake up for it, it doesn't happen overnight. You might have it within your body, and it's really important to figure it out if what stage you're in so that you can start doing lifestyle changes and start preventing the damage and prevent reversing the progression.
Would you support just regular screening for this as something that we should do, like at every annual checkup?
Absolutely. So, I mean, 27% of us are walking around with this condition, and it can cause us to have, you know, fatigue, fertility issues, mental health issues. I've seen people who were misdiagnosed with psychotic disorders. It's crazy, right? And so I would advocate for everybody to get tested for thyroid antibodies at least once a year. And women of childbearing age even more frequently.
If you catch Hashimoto's early, what can you do?
Well, you can prevent a whole decade of freaking symptoms, right? So that's a big payoff, right?
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is you could prevent damage to your thyroid gland, so then you don't need to take thyroid hormones. And another great thing is you can prevent having autoimmune disease later on in life. Other types of autoimmune disease that don't have hormones for them, like lupus, rheumatoid arthritis, those kinds of things.
How much does it cost to get a test for Hashimoto's?
Insurance will cover it if you have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you can self-order it through labs like MyMedLab or Direct Labs, all these wonderful labs online. And to get both antibody tests, depending on the lab, it's going to be anywhere from $40 to $100. And then they run specials when it's even cheaper.
So this is about as expensive as vitamin D testing, which you should also get on a regular basis. It's not a $500 food allergy panel, which is also kind of useful. What is the most common precipitating thing that turns on Hashimoto's, in your opinion, knowing that there's debate about this?
In my opinion, and based on interviewing and surveying over 2,000 people with Hashimoto's, stress seems to be the biggest thing. So about 70% of people will say that they were going through a significant stressful period in their life.
So husbands are the cause of Hashimoto's?
Husbands, wives, in-laws, you know.
Okay. So any kind of life stress?
Any kind of life stress. Generally, it's going to be a negative stress. So we see people who have a divorce, or perhaps they have a death in the family. So that can be a negative stress, but it could also be a positive stress, like having a child. So that can precipitate thyroid disease as well. And that's a stressor on the body, right?
Would cutting calories and working out several hours a day be a stress on the body?
I think so. That actually goes back to my whole safety theory. So the reason why we develop thyroid disease is basically, our body thinks that we're in a dangerous state, and the thyroid gland can actually sense and send danger signals to our body whenever it senses there's danger around. And, you know, kind of going back to the adaptive physiology model, we are these creatures with our ancient genes showing up in today's world. And why on earth would a caveman or a cavewoman exercise for 7 hours a day and cut their calories?
Because they want to get swole?
close. But, you know, generally it's going to be because something really horrible is happening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a tiger that won't stop chasing me. That'll generally do it.
Right, or there's a war, or there's a famine, or there's a flood, or, you know, one of the deadly things happening. And so in that kind of situation, it would actually be protective for somebody to have a slower metabolism. So studies have found that prisoners of war, various types of people who have been exposed to trauma, they actually have lower levels of thyroid hormones. And it makes sense. Like, you're going to be, if your metabolism is slowed, you don't need as much food, so you'll survive a famine. If you are hiding in your cave and sleeping all day instead of being out and about, you know, maybe you might survive that war because you might not get stabbed, right, or shanked, whatever. whatever they had in those days.
Clubbed.
Yeah, there you go. And so this is like a really important thing to consider, is like, what are you doing in your day-to-day life that's making you feel like you are threatened? What would your inner cave woman or caveman say? Like, what, you know? what is it, what's happening? Is it traffic? Is it stress? Is it calorie restriction, right?
So you're saying excessive Facebook alerts cause Hashimoto's?
I really like Facebook, so I'm not going to comment on that.
Yeah, your likes didn't go down. There you go. Yeah. No.
I don't want my page shut down.
The kind of the point behind that question was more, how much acute big stress does it take versus just the little things that grind you down?
Like, you know, sleep deprivation. So that's a big stressor. Holding on to feelings of anger, like being like high strung. And we find that with a lot of people that have thyroid disease, and I'm not going to say everybody, but I'm sure there are some like natural couch potatoes, but a lot of them tend to be type A and tend to be very hard on themselves, and they push themselves past their limits. And that sends a signal to the body that they're not safe, right? And so it's like, you know, they're like, keep going, keep going. And why would a cave woman keep going, right, when she's actually tired?
What was the stress that brought yours on?
Oh, man. So I was actually, I grew up in Poland, and I lived on the Ukrainian border growing up. And so I was one of the lucky that was exposed to Chernobyl when I was around 3 years old. And I'm sure that set off the kind of set the stage, right? About 80% of kids within a certain age that I was when I was exposed, ended up with thyroid antibodies for Hashimoto's. The closer they were to Chernobyl, the more likely they were to have it. And then it was ended up being likely Epstein-Barr virus in college, maybe too many late nights, too many fun parties, yeah. Who knows, but definitely Epstein-Barr virus was probably contributing.
Do you see things like Lyme disease or my favorite toxic mold, which is like endemic, as being the type of stressors that turn on Hashimoto's?
Oh, absolutely. So Lyme disease, there are actually numerous cross-reactive proteins on Borrelia, the Lyme bacteria, that cross-react with the thyroid gland. And so the way that works is when the Lyme, when Borrelia is in the body tries to attack it, right? And there's a mechanism known as molecular mimicry where basically the bacteria is recognized as an enemy, but like when I think about the immune system, I think about it taking like little cell phone pictures. If you have an iPhone, like just little snapshots of like, this is a part of the bacteria, this is what we attack. And so this is a protein sequence that gets recognized as an enemy, and there's matching protein sequences on the thyroid gland that can get attacked. And so so definitely with Lyme, this has been really well documented. And I would say the longer a person has Lyme, the more likely they are going to develop thyroid disease, Hashimoto's, or Graves' disease. And the same goes with toxic mold exposure. So some people might develop asthma, other people might develop Hashimoto's. I've seen it quite a few times, and it's usually the people that just can't seem to get better usually have mold or Lyme as a trigger.
It's a really interesting thing. These are environmental variables that are basically mm-hmm. turning on your immune system so that for some reason, which is probably evolutionary, like you're saying, it turns it against us, but it's doing its best to manage what it perceives as a threat environment, saying, well, I don't need this gland anymore, to hell with that.
Well, when you think about mold as a toxin, so any kind of toxin can bring in the autoimmune response. And it's basically our body saying, hey, there's a lot of toxicity around. It's not the best time to maybe reproduce. Maybe this is not the best time to be out in the world. Maybe you need to go back in your cave and rest. And then if a person is infected with a condition, perhaps that's a way of us, you know, protecting the herd, that we withdraw to our caves instead of, infecting everybody else, right? I've thought about this a lot.
Nature's kind of mean, I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have biohacking, right?
That's also why we have those wasps that lay their eggs inside spiders while they're still alive. Anytime someone tells you that nature is kind, it's like, no. I don't know what that had to do with Hashimoto's, but I just like to say
it
that.
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah, there's a link, I'm sure. Conspiracies.
I'm sure there's a study on it somewhere, connecting the two.
In your new book, you talk about, it's like a third of the book, you don't talk about the thyroid. And partly I was like, what a ripoff. No. By the way, I've like fully endorsed all of Isabel's work. She's like my go-to thyroid expert when I don't know the answer. So what you're talking about, though, is liver, adrenals, and gut. Why did you go there in a book about Hashimoto's?
So long story short, I had this client. I had actually a host of clients that just, you know, we were going after all these chronic infections and all these kind of cool and fancy triggers and trying all these supplements, and they just weren't getting better. They were sensitive to everything. And quite a few of them had multiple chemical sensitivities, which means, like, you know, perfume will bother you and you can't walk into the mall because you're overwhelmed with all the chemicals that are in the air.
I had that. I would hold my breath ever since I was a kid walking down that soap aisle. Ugh. Like, fabric softener was like kryptonite. I totally get that.
Totally. And it was like, okay, we'd give them a supplement and then they'd feel worse. It would be something very benign, like a B vitamin. And so I wanted to find a way to help them. And I thought, okay, well, maybe their body has all these toxins that are stored within the body and they're not getting them out correctly. So when you have a thyroid condition, you're not going to be sweating enough, right? And that means toxins are not leaving that way. You're always going to have intestinal permeability or leaky gut, so toxins are not leaving that way. And you end up with circulating immune complexes that form to the antibodies that end up lodged in your liver. So then your liver is sort of like this overworked office worker that just is like frustrated with anything. And you come up and you know, you're like, here's a little perfume. And she's like, get out of my face. And so you end up being like, you end up being sensitive to everything. And so I started them on this liver support protocol. And I was actually surprised because one of my clients reached out to me within a week and she said, wow, you know, I'm at the mall with my kids again. I am shopping, like the Yankee Candle store is not bothering me. Like none of these things are bothering me like they used to. Her headaches resolved, her depression lifted, joint pains lifted. She was feeling like herself again. And that was within like a week of liver support. So I was like, huh, I think I'm onto something. And then really I started researching resiliency and thinking about how do we build up a person first before we give them like fancy stuff, right? And so I started thinking about what are the fundamentals of healing for each person? So what are the things that just about everybody can do to make themselves feel better regardless of what their root cause is? Because every Hashimoto's patient is like a snowflake. Everybody's got like a slightly different story. But supporting our own body's natural protective defenses, so supporting the liver, helps to build resilience because now we're no longer toxic to everything. Supporting the adrenals, that means we're less stressed out and it means the world feels like a safer place because when your adrenals are burned out, you oftentimes feel like everything's a threat. And so that makes you feel safer. And then supporting the gut, you know, the gut is key in every autoimmune condition. And so we couldn't ignore that. And really what we found is supporting those three body systems, people feel significantly better.
Now, I've read a few new studies that talk about how leaky gut doesn't cause autoimmunity. Autoimmunity causes leaky gut.
Uh-huh.
Do you buy that?
You know, it's like a chicken or egg thing. And so it's hard to say. What I have found is that we know that there are certain things that cause leaky gut. And when we address those triggers, we can actually reverse it. And so I have seen, you know, addressing the gut can actually reverse autoimmune disease. So I would say, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I believe that. I think it could be a chicken or egg thing, but definitely there are foods that can cause it. There could be nutrient deficiencies. There could be infections within the gut that can cause leaky gut. For example, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, 50% of people with thyroid disease have it. And when we eliminate that, we can see a remission and we can see things improving. So, yeah, so I would say give it a try at least, right?
So now I have to ask this, even though it's kind of a weird question. Is stinky farts a good way of potentially diagnosing thyroid disease?
Stinky farts, you know, there's... was this the payback question?
No. I was just going to say, you should talk to Michael. Sorry, Michael. I love you, man.
So actually, if you want to get nitty gritty, so stinky farts can be a sign of sulfur toxicity, mm-hmm. sulfur intolerance, as well as Giardia. So those are some potential things if you want to get into like fart smelling. Do you want to like do a demonstration?
Like, I need a volunteer from the audience. You actually told me something a while back, and I've had a few parasites recently, which is something I'm going to be writing about. And this was actually a couple years ago. I had dialed in, actually more than a couple now, I had dialed in the Bulletproof diet. I'm like, it's effortless. I keep my weight where I want it. I'm never hungry. And then in like, about 5 or 6 weeks, I gained 20 pounds. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, don't tell me butter doesn't work. I already know it works. And so I did some testing, and I had blastocystis, which is a relatively common parasite. And I took some anti-parasitics, killed it, and radically my weight control returned back to normal pretty quickly. But I also had developed some food allergies at the same time that I think actually were more caused by taking... I was doing an extreme low-carb diet for 3 months straight. So I had basically one serving of broccoli a day, and the rest was like tons of fat and some meat, like I'm going to be an Eskimo. There's a reason I like cyclical ketogenic diets, not full-time ketogenic or full-time carbogenic diets. So you told me, I don't know, several years later, that you've seen an increase in food allergies and people have blasto.
Oh, this is my favorite parasite to talk about.
Totally.
I'm excited.
I know you'd get all jumping up and down.
So Blastocystis hominis is like a protozoan parasite, so you can't see it with the naked eye, so it's not like a giant worm or anything crazy like that. But it's been connected with irritable bowel syndrome, and it's been connected with chronic hives, which are two conditions that are connected with Hashimoto's. There are so many studies connecting hives and Hashimoto's. And I was like, huh, that's so interesting. And I kept finding it, I personally had it, and I kept finding it in my clients with Hashimoto's. Actually about 25 to 35% of people will have it with Hashimoto's. And what we find is whenever we address this parasite, we see thyroid antibodies reducing, a lot of food sensitivities going away, especially to grains, sugar. It's just amazing that hives go away, irritable bowel syndrome goes away. And there was recently a study that was published in 2015, and I was like really jumping for joy because it was showing, it was a case study that showed remission of Hashimoto's with eradication of Blastocystis hominis. And I was like, I knew it, I knew it. So it was quite exciting for a health nerd. I don't think my clients are as excited when I tell them that they have a parasite with a, like a big smile on their face. But I say it because we know that when we have it, we know that when we treat it, things get a lot better.
What percentage of people in the room would you guess have this parasite?
You know, I would say if you guys want to provide stool samples and do a study. No, I think probably anywhere from maybe 25%. That would be my guesstimate, but I'd love to validate
close
that.
It's 27%, isn't it?
It might be.
So is it worth all of us getting a poop test?
Right, it is. And the thing is, though, some doctors consider it a commensal organism, which means that they think it's supposed to be there. And they think it's part of your normal flora, but there's like fighting scientists on either side. And what it actually can do, like with knives and everything.
I would think they'd be flinging poop at each other. I mean, these kind of doctors.
That too, like, you think it's commensal, you take this, right? But it actually does cause intestinal permeability or leaky gut. And it does cause IBS. And lo and behold, people that had hives and you treat it, the hives goes into remission. Lo and behold, same with IBS. So it's like... key thing here is you need to do the right test for it. So if you go to your, I think we're both kind of preaching to the choir, but generally functional medicine testing is going to be able to pick it up a little bit better. It's a stool test. And then the treatments, we want to make sure we're not using metronidazole because it can be resistant to that. About 50% of strains are.
It worked for me.
Metronidazole. So yeah. you had like the not... certain types of strains. There's like 8 different strains and about half of them are resistant. The other half are not. If you guys like look it up on Facebook, there are people that say like they could never get better from it. And it's usually because they're not utilizing the right treatments, but you can medication Alinea and then herbal protocols with oil of oregano, wormwood, as well as berberine over the course of 2 months can actually get rid of it, as well as Sarcomyces boulardii. So it is definitely something. If you find it, you know it's not supposed to be there. If you can get rid of it, and it's fun to see what kind of symptoms disappear.
How much does that kind of a poop test cost?
Probably anywhere from $200 to $500, depending on which lab that you use.
Okay, so that one's relatively expensive.
Yeah.
My experience with parasites has been that really successful parasites don't like to leave the body, and only the bad ones leave. Well, like not bad for you, but they're just bad parasites. Like they aren't good at their job. So I've had some where I went to 3 different labs, and like no one could figure it out. And that was pretty bad. So I'll be doing a whole podcast about that. But I ended up having to go to an 80-year-old doctor who wrote 8 textbooks on tropical diseases. And that guy, it took him like 20 minutes. He's like, oh yeah, I know. Why would you need a lab test? Like, mm-hmm. I can just tell with my Barry-style master vision. Actually, he didn't. He used a scope. But anyway.
One of the keys is like multiple food sensitivities. Because generally, if you are a person, if you have a primary food sensitivity, it's only like maybe 1 to 3. But when you have blasto, you're just sensitive to everything like sugar and carbs and rice. And you're just like, what's going on? I can't eat anything without being sensitive.
Do you have people come to you for help who completely reverse their food allergies and can like eat everything?
We've seen a few people, and I don't recommend it, where they've utilized probiotics, where they have said they can eat gluten without a reaction and dairy without a reaction. I don't recommend it, but majority of times, for me, I was like sensitive to everything. I was like this thin, and I've reversed all of my food sensitivities. I avoid, except for gluten and dairy, which I avoid religiously, and then I also avoid nuts, but yeah, we see that all the time where people get rid of food sensitivities, where they go from, you know, 16 to 27 to, you know, they just stay off of gluten and dairy.
And so you're good with eggs now?
Yeah, I could do eggs now.
So eggs are one of the best foods you can do. That's why they're in the bulletproof zone on the Bulletproof Diet Roadmap. And when I did this 3-month sort of crazy excessive fat and protein with zero carbs or almost zero carbs, I did a good number of eggs, and I developed an allergy to those eggs, and I'm like probably 70% better, but I still don't eat eggs regularly, which just when you travel, it's like Mother Nature's perfect food, not to mention they're good in ice cream.
Mm-hmm. So and when you boil them and take them on a road trip, it's like perfect. It makes the car smell really nice, according to my husband.
Yep. My wife says the same thing. Actually, she's Swedish, and she's like, oh, that'd be great with sardines. I'm like, oh, didn't win on that one. Spoiled fish, we got that. All right. If someone came to you and said, look, I think I might have Hashimoto's, but I don't really know where to start, what do you tell them to do first?
We'll definitely do the testing first to figure out what you're working with, so do antibody testing. And then what I really focus on, and this is part of my liver support protocol, is eliminating the most reactive foods. So those are going to be gluten, 88% of people with Hashimoto's feel better off of it. Dairy, about 80%.
This is dairy protein, dairy sugar, dairy fat?
Generally casein. So casein is generally going to be the biggest problem for people. So a lot of people, unless they have like a really severe casein reaction, like I do, they can usually tolerate things like ghee and even butter. But generally, you know, like milk and whey protein can even be a problem for a lot of people. And I just always recommend to exclude it for at least 3 weeks and see how you feel off of it. I know I was like doing whey protein shakes with yogurt and all this other great stuff. And I was like, this is great. And then I found out I had like a really bad reaction. I was like, no way, this food voodoo is not going to work. And 3 days later, like half of my symptoms were gone. So just something for people to consider. Sugar is another big trigger, as well as soy. So you get off of these foods. You add in different types of foods that support your thyroid. Bone broth is great. Green smoothies are great. We're looking at supplements, selenium, which moose apparently like just as much as humans.
Chocolate
do.
Moose.
Meese.
Meese.
Mooses. And so selenium can be really, really helpful for thyroid disease, thiamine, magnesium, vitamin D. Get your B12 checked. Get your ferritin checked. Do all these things, and you're going to start feeling significantly better when you get your nutrition address. And these are things a lot of times you could do in your own home. Like you don't need to go to like a fancy doctor. You could do it either on your own or with your regular doctor down the street.
Awesome. Those are all the questions that I had for you, except for this last one. The problem is you've already answered the 3 things, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to just change it entirely. What are 3 things you're grateful for?
What are 3 things I'm grateful for? I'm really grateful for having the opportunity to take back my health, And to actually, I'm grateful for having had Hashimoto's. Sounds kind of crazy to say that, because it allowed me to, it really allowed me to fulfill like my passion and destiny of helping other people and becoming a healer. I'm really grateful for the amazing supportive people in my life, especially my husband Michael, my mom, my friend Dave Asprey. And like another thing that I'm really grateful for is living in this digital age where information is really at your fingertips, and we're making all these crazy, crazy connections that would have taken us, you know, thousands of years and thousands of hours to synthesize, where we're all so connected. And you know, like I feel really connected within everybody within my community, within Dave's community, with all of you guys. Like I feel like we can share information so rapidly with each other and learn from each other, which is quite amazing when you're a nerd.
You mentioned earlier that you're not in your 20s, which I'm sure was a shock to a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm not in my 20s. Can you guys
Now, do you remember Microfish?
Microfish? What? Well, I also came to the U.S. when I was 9, so like a lot of the references from like the 80s are completely lost on me. I'm like, what? Leggings? Socks? What are you talking about? So that might be a part of it.
So that's okay. I hear that a lot when I talk to people under 30. And
yeah, so I'm 25.
If you're a millennial, before Google, before Facebook and all that, the way we would do research like this is we'd go to the library and we'd look up in a little card catalog and be like, oh, a card catalog. I have one. It's an antique in my office because it's so cool. And you find this little number, and then you go to the book, and they're like, oh, sorry, that's on microfiche, which means some jerk took a perfectly good book, and they took pictures of it and shrunk them down on these little tiny things. So you go through little envelopes and find little plastic things and put them under, like, a microscope, and then scroll around until you find what you wanted and look through a little hole or on a screen.
I thought these were elf books.
That would have been a better name than microfiche. But seriously, like that last grateful is... It's so easy to say, oh, like how would you look for a correlation between things when you can just search for it? It's frighteningly easy. It would have taken, I would guess, 25 years of library research the old way to write my latest book. Like, it simply would not have happened. And I'm guessing with your book as well. Like, you just couldn't have done it without the tech that we have at our fingertips.
No, I was able to survey over 2,000 people with Hashimoto's, which is like the largest survey of people with Hashimoto's ever done, to figure out what was working best for them and then include that in my book. And I was able to sit in my yoga pants and like download 800 like scientific papers onto my computer. And you know, they're like taking a lot of space in our house, but I'm working on that.
You wear pants when you write?
Only when I write on camera. When I'm off camera, I don't.
I can tell you that most of my book was written between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m., but it was in my labs, which are separate from the house, so I was wearing pants because it was cold to get back into the house to go to sleep. So,
Canada's cold.
Yeah, they do that up there.
Yeah.
All right, and because we're in Denver, I have one more bonus question. Cannabis and Hashimoto's. What's the connection?
It's legal, so... So I get this question quite frequently, and can cannabis help Hashimoto's? We've seen some benefits in people with joint pain, with carpal tunnel, which is a common symptom of Hashimoto's. So we have seen some benefits with that. It can potentially act as an adaptogen as well, from what I've heard. So, you know, I recommend usually other adaptogens because I work with people from all over the world and not all of them have access. The challenges could be, like, if you're already, like, fatigued and tired and brain fogged, may not work so well for you there. So, you know, pros and cons.
Is that why you moved here?
No comment. No, I'm kidding. it's funny because I actually lived in Amsterdam before this, and people
exactly.
were like, why did you go to Amsterdam? Why didn't you just move to Colorado? And yeah, and that wasn't the reason why. I loved Colorado. How can you not? I mean, we've got like so much sunshine. Everybody's gluten-free. They ask you what food sensitivities you have when you walk into a restaurant. You could wear yoga pants out to a fancy club at night. In Boulder, like on New Year's Eve, we were all wearing sweatpants and dancing. Like, I mean, it doesn't get better than that.
All right. On that note, Isabella, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Don't leave yet. Where can people find you and where can they find your book?
Thyroidpharmacist.com is my website where you guys can find me. And I have all sorts of great gifts if you go to /gift, obviously. and then my book is everywhere on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. And I'm actually doing a book signing on Saturday in Boulder at the Barnes & Noble if any of you guys want to come and say hello.
Awesome. And for you listening in your cars rather than live or listening at work, you can go to that same thyroidpharmacist.com domain name and look up Isabella's work. It is absolutely worth doing. And if you're just interested in general detox stuff, her book is a wealth of knowledge. I highly recommend it. And while you're at it, do what you're supposed to do as someone who enjoys books. You go to Amazon and you leave a review after you read her book. And since you're already at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, there was like a really cool orange book right next to it that said Headstrong on it, and you happen to pick it up, like maybe as like a support for Isabella's book that beat Headstrong so thoroughly on the New York Times list, that would be okay too. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much. So much fun.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.